Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And the United States is not the only nation wrestling with opioid addiction. It is, however, one of the few nations unwilling to do much about it, writes our next guest, Dr. Adam Bisaga. Bisaga is an addiction expert and professor of psychiatry at Columbia. We all know it's bad. Here's one stat on how bad. On average, opioid overdoses kill more than 100 people a day. And of course, that tears apart families and communities in the process and affects much more than even those 100 people who die. Dr. Bisaga says beating the epidemic requires a rethinking of addiction treatment. So let's find out how. His book, Overcoming Opioid Addiction, is a guide for families and medical professionals dealing with opioid addiction. Dr. Bisaga, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me and for your interest in this important topic.
Before diving into what needs changes, anything else to say about the magnitude of the opioid problem that people might not tend to think about?
No, I think it's pretty clear. I think by now everybody is aware that we've had almost 20 years of increasing overdose rates, and this is most deadly epidemic in U.S. history. And it has continued unabated, you know, mostly because of our kind of languid, ineffective response. And I think many people may not know that we do have highly effective treatment, but a tragedy is that we cannot seem to figure out how to deliver the treatment to people that need it.
And your book underscores how different opioid addiction is from other addictions. So what about this addiction, before we get into the effective treatments, makes it especially dangerous and harder to treat?
Right. Well, opioid addiction is the most lethal of all psychiatric disorders. You know, about 1 to 2% of people that use opioids that are addicted to them every year are dying. So your risk of death if you've been using for 10 years is pretty high. And that is different from other opioid epidemics, the other addictions. You know, the second difference is, of course, that we do have effective treatment. We may not have effective treatment for marijuana, for cocaine dependence. We have somewhat effective treatment for alcohol addiction, but we do have effective treatments for opioid addiction that makes it even more kind of painful that we cannot seem to be able to stall this epidemic.
When you say we do have effective treatments, you're not just talking about naloxone, which is
right.
The overdose reversal drug. You're right. Talking about more long-term things?
Right, absolutely. I think most people get maybe even confused because over time we put the pressure on different aspects of the disease, but the effective treatment is really the medical model of treatment. You know, we understand opiate addiction as a medical disorder, chronic medical disorder. We do understand the changes that take place in brain of people who are vulnerable to develop addiction. And then we understand and we know how the treatment using medications primarily, but also additional behavioral treatments, can reverse those changes and help someone to have a life. Even though they do have this chronic disorder, they still can have a pretty comfortable life.
In a piece you wrote for Salon, you wrote that our response to HIV/AIDS taught us how to beat the opioid crisis. Can you explain that connection for our audience?
Right, absolutely. I think at that time we had kind of think a similar kind of sense of impending doom, that we have this increasing rates of deaths. We didn't really know how to treat it. It was a new disorder, but we were able to mount a tremendous response with the help of grassroots organizations. I think some highly visible celebrities took part, scientists, and we've had a response from Congress funding a lot of treatment, actually funding a free treatment, funding research, and in a short time, we're able to have effective treatments and be able to implement them. And that overdose deaths, which were at peak similar to overdose deaths we have now from opioid epidemic, plummeted. Now, this is very different with this epidemic. We have new medications coming out, but the overdose deaths go up. And the question is, can we learn something from the past experience?
So listeners, if someone you love or loved or you're otherwise close to struggles or struggled with opioid addiction, Do you feel prepared to deal with it, or can Dr. Bisaga answer a question for you, perhaps? Feel free to call in with your questions at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Dr. Adam Bisaga, professor of psychiatry at Columbia University and an addiction expert, has written the book Overcoming Opioid Addiction. So what works? Were you just indicating that it's medications?
Right. So, because it's a medical disorder, we should really think of it as we think of treating other medical disorders, other chronic medical disorders. We know that we cannot really cure opioid addiction with a short-term intensive treatment. We really need to switch gears and think how to manage, how to help people who live with this disorder, survive long term. And the medical treatment, including medications, is at the center of it, and it can be helpful for a great majority of people. Some people who have additional problems, whether medical or psychiatric, may need additional medications or additional behavioral treatments, but the medication by itself can be helpful. And we do have FDA-approved medications. We have three distinct medications, methadone, buprenorphine, and naltrexone. Each of them work in a different way, and we're trying to figure out which medication may be a good match for a particular patient.
But if you're talking about things like methadone, how do you respond to critics who say that treating opioid addiction with drugs is right. counterproductive right. and just trading one addiction for right. another?
I think that's the thinking that really is getting us into trouble. I think that's why we do have this crisis, because we have this pervasive notion that it is not a medical disorder, that it should be really treated using kind of spiritual behavioral perspective, as we have treated addiction for the past, since the 30s. But unfortunately, that might have been relevant at the time when we did not have medical advances. Right now, we do have a medical advances. We have a huge amount of evidence, more than for any other psychiatric and maybe many medical disorders, that those are the most effective treatments. And nevertheless, because of the stigma, we cannot seem to incorporate those into the primary healthcare. And the other just factor is that addiction treatment still resides outside of the medical sphere. You have this addiction treatment system that is non-professional, does not include medications, doesn't have physicians, and treats, quote unquote, this disorder that is one of the most lethal disorders and claims that it's treated. So,
do you at least say we need both? Medications and behavioral therapies?
I think there is a lot of good things that have been developed by the traditional treatment systems that we could take advantage of, and we have. A lot of the behavioral treatments that we have manualized were actually derived from the experience of the addiction treatment programs. So we can definitely take advantage of this, but at the core, it has to be a medical model, because we understand how serious it is.
But you also write about a phenomenon that you call death by detox. What's that?
I think we do talk about the phenomena that many people who believe that they are getting a treatment and go to those traditional providers that do not offer medication often are detoxified. And by detoxification, you lose the protection that your body developed to opioids. And then when you relapse, which happens in a great majority of people, 70, maybe even 90% of people after detoxification relapse, without having a protection, they are at risk of death. So the risk of overdose death goes up after the traditional treatment, which is kind of mind-boggling, right?
Wow, that's really mind-boggling.
That's what people don't really know. No one really tells people about the options they have. And, patients are kind of desperate for any help, and they don't really know what is the right evidence-based treatment and what is the treatment that many people claim is effective.
Jim in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Dr. Adam Bisaga. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you. I wonder if your guests could comment on the role of other drugs, especially alcohol, in opioid overdoses, and whether it's really correct to say, as most people do, 100 opioid overdoses a day. Isn't it really opioid-related deaths?
Right. Well, I think a lot of the deaths, again, we're way behind of trying to diagnose and test every case of death, and we don't know whether this is accidental or maybe intentional. Some deaths are certainly intentional, meaning suicide attempts. There are other substances involved, but the most deadly of them all are, of course, opiates, and other substances in combination with opiates are even more deadly. So you're absolutely right that some deaths are because of the polysubstance intoxication, but we do know that opioids are driving these increasing rates because we have seen the relationship between increased access to medication and increased number of deaths, and the access to alcohol or other substances have not changed dramatically.
So that question was about alcohol and opioids. Here's another interactive question or interactions question. Felix in Greenpoint, you're on WNYC. Hi, Felix.
Hi, folks. Great show. I've got two quick questions, if I can. First, doctor, I'd like to know, I know marijuana is becoming legal as a medical thing in a lot of states, and I'm wondering, is it possible? I have an uncle who's got opioid problems, and I'm wondering, is it possible to move from opioids? Can some kind of marijuana medicine replace opioids for any people?
I mean, I would encourage really you to think about the treatments that we have a strong evidence that they are effective. And we do have three FDA-approved medications. We know they are extremely helpful. They cut your risk of death or relapse by half at least, if not more. There is something emerging about the relationship between access to marijuana and people who might be using it to relieve some of the distress related to opioid addiction or some of the distress that might have caused them to get into opioids in the first place. But we know kind of very little about that. There is a lot of confusion, no systematic data. And I would really encourage people primarily to seek a medical established model as opposed to, as a primary, solution, and then seek additional solutions.
So the theory that marijuana use could be preventive is untested. What about the theory that marijuana is a gateway drug to opioids?
Well, that's a completely different discussion. And I think we'll need to have a separate show on that. I think that of course, access to drugs will encourage people to use other drugs. We don't know whether this is a direct causal relationship or kind of associated relationship. I think we should really focus on solving this problem, which is so pressing and urgent. Other problems we've had, we don't want to forget about other drugs because they may come back as they have came back in the past. After previous opioid epidemics, but I think we have to really focus on finding solutions to this one.
Jim in the West Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Thank you for taking my call, Brian. I'm pretty appalled by the bias that your guest is explaining. His only method is the medical model, the pharma model. He's almost like being a spokesperson for big pharma here. I agree that each person has to be looked at differently who is an addict to see what is the best way to get them off of whatever they're addicted to. I've been in 12-step programs for 37 years, both NA and AA, and I think that his unwillingness to give any credit to how those programs have worked for many, many people. The most important thing that he said to me was warning people who go off of drugs, and if they relapse, they go back to the level that they were taking before, and many people die. That is true. But I will tell you, people like myself who are in these 12-step programs caution very carefully the people that come in and how you, just like any medication, you have to taper off of what you are addicted to. But I am shocked that you have not been critical of his big pharma, his medical model as the only way to cure this. Curing opiate addiction with other drugs is a problem for me.
Let me get a response because we're going to run out of time soon. And I'm sure that Jim is not the only person who's gone through 12-step programs and feel that they have helped them tremendously listening right now and having this reaction.
Absolutely. And I'm, you raise, of course, many, many points that really deserve to be addressed in detail. You know, we are really talking about opiate addiction, which is, a very deadly, if untreated, very deadly disease. We are not claiming that 12-step or self-help movements are not helpful. Of course, they've been extremely helpful for many, many people. But what we know that what works for opiate addiction is the treatment that involves medication. We have several studies that do show that people who are not treated within the medical models are at risk of relapse and overdose death. And you cannot really deny that. Now, of course, what you are showing is that the division that we have in the field, we have two kind of approaches that should not really be opposing, should be really complementary approaches. And I think that a lot of traditional treatment providers see the advantage of recovery with medication. And major, you know, thought leaders have changed how recovery is seen. And recovery with medication is absolutely acceptable. We're really talking about allowing people to have a life free of distress, you know, protect them from death, and allow them to do other things in life. And what's the evidence that the best way to do that?
Are you paid by the pharmaceutical industry?
I am not paid by the pharmaceutical industry. I am a physician, and of course, I do promote medical model because I see it working. I've been doing this work for 20 years, work with hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of patients, and training other providers, and see the advantage of that. So that's my perspective. I don't have a personal recovery history, and I can certainly appreciate how other people may find that their experience is the one that should be, adopted for others.
We've just got about 30 seconds left with Dr. Adam Bisaga, who's an addiction expert and a professor of psychiatry at Columbia, and now has a new book called Overcoming Opioid Addiction. I wonder if you have a thought about Mayor de Blasio's plan to open opioid safe injection centers.
Right, absolutely. So we do want to have a treatment systems that can reach a lot of people. And of course, there is a lot of people who are not ready to quit. And we want to make sure that when they are ready to quit, they are still alive and well. So harm reduction strategies are absolutely a cornerstone of treatment, have been used in many other countries. And that includes education about self-injections, you know, how to keep yourself safe, maybe have a space for doing that under medical supervision. And then hopefully we can engage them in actual treatment when they are ready.
Dr. Bisaga, thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.